Stoop Kids, Bloop Kids, coming soon at the end of each.
Bleep, bloop, 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 bloops, kids.
Bloop Kids is very funny.
That's right.
Okay, well, back to, cut. Jason, you cannot leave that in.
here we go, here we go.
Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. Just a quick heads up, today you'll be listening to the same group of voices that you're used to, as well as a new different voice that you will also come to know and love. So that's exciting.
Ooh, yeah!
Right? But before we get into that, that was just a teaser. Before we get into all that, I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry. You can find me at Shitake Harry.
I'm Emily. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
We've also, we've got one fella here who will definitely kick my if I provoke him, and that's our super producer, Jason Daphnis. You can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also, keep up with the podcast various shenanigans, that's right, on the internet as it is, through Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod. That's kids with a Z. Our guest today for episode 9 is friend of the pod, friend of the co-hosts, and friend to art and artists everywhere, is what I'm going with. Drew Tenenbaum. Drew, thanks a bunch for being here today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited that I was invited to join on this episode.
Yeah, of course. The thing that we've been asking every guest up to now, which I will also ask you right now, is what's your history with Hey Arnold? You know, what role has it played in your life, your upbringing, however you feel like characterizing the show's influence on you?
Yeah. Me and my family actually spent a lot of time watching TV. I have four sisters, and we're all, you know, within like a couple years on the other side. I'm a middle child. And we spent, you know, probably too much time in front of the TV. And so I'm, you know, definitely a fan of nostalgia for the era that Hey Arnold aired. I also watched, you know, Disney Channel and Cartoon Network around the same time. So, you know, I saw really the entire cornucopia of available cartoons for people my age and, to be honest, younger and even probably older if you count Adult Swim, you know, at that time. And Hey Arnold is one of those cartoons that sort of sticks with you, right? Like, it's so iconic in the way that its, you know, main character is drawn and the theme song, right? Like, the theme song is something that, you know, has persisted in pop culture sort of for a long time, as well as, you know, the title being sort of shouted in it, you know, Hey Arnold, like, that's definitely something that stuck with me. And so when it comes to Hey Arnold specifically, Harry actually asked me which episodes of Hey Arnold were ones that I thought of when I wanted to guest. And both of these episodes, which I didn't know are part of the same, like, single run.
That's right. That's wild. Yeah,
but both of these episodes were on my short list of episodes that I remembered and wanted to engage with.
Dang. Wow. Yeah, that's funny and great how that worked out. Also, everything you said is, I think, probably the exact vibe we want for this show. Show? Podcast? Whatever. So it's great that you're here. Once again, we're talking about episode 9 of Hey Arnold, and we're kicking it off with episode 9A, which is called Mugged. Original air date, November 11th, 1996. The Wikipedia sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Arnold learns the secrets of self-defense from his grandma after getting held up by a thug. He realizes his skills are getting out of hand when he beats up an innocent man. I'm glad they shouted out the best part of the episode. As we always do, shouting out the people who made this episode possible. This episode was the first instance I saw where the directing credits got a little murky, depending on where you looked. So just what I see here, Jamie Mitchell, depending on where you look, he's either back as a supervising director or it's just a regular co-director alongside Tuck Tucker. So shout outs to those two. The only writing credit we have for this episode is creator of the show, Craig Bartlett. So shout outs to Craig for all the work he does in general with the show and also this episode specifically. With that, Emily, we'll go to you first. What were some of your big takeaways from this episode?
Well, thanks, Cody, for asking. This is a grandma episode, so just by default, it is another favorite of mine. I love all the grandma episodes so much, as I've previously discussed on probably every single recording of this podcast. But yeah, this is a really awesome episode involving mostly just Arnold and his grandma. I really like the visual symbolism they have going throughout with the lightning strikes. That's kind of... It comes into play in different ways, and I really like how they use it just throughout the entire episode to symbolize different things even. And I love Grandma's lines in this episode so much. I think as far as like writing down notes for this podcast, I wrote more quotes for this episode than any other episode so far, just because Grandma has amazing lines in this one. One of them, which I think kind of summarizes this whole episode, is that Grandma's talking about, like, it's okay to have self-defense, and Arnold's, like, trying to figure out loud, like, what that means with the metaphors that she's used throughout the episode, and Arnold's like, wait, so it's not that you don't go looking for trouble, because that causes more trouble, but that it's okay to stand up for yourself and grab the fly when it comes to you. And then Grandma's like, oh, yeah, that's something like that. That's sort of what I mean. but yeah, she has great lines. It's a great episode. And I will let everyone else say their thoughts, as I would love to hear them.
Yeah, definitely. Harry, can you top that?
Probably not. I don't know that that's the sort of competition that we want to be setting up. Oh, okay, sure. Well, my mistake then. It's a funny episode to return to, because when I was a kid, I didn't like this episode very much at all, mostly because I found it very upsetting and legitimately upsetting. And I think that that makes a lot of sense that Craig Bartlett wrote it, because I think it's an episode that cleaves very close to the sort of like overarching core ideas of what Hey Arnold is and what it's supposed to be all about broadly. But seeing Hey Arnold, who is this like paragon for me, certainly as a kid, as sort of now, of like inherent goodness and kindness, seeing him like become the monster, so to speak, as a result of his fear and trauma was like very deeply upsetting to me as a kid. And even the ending being what it is and being restorative was not quite enough for me to like feel better about it. And so like I always, this was always sort of a black mark in my mind, but returning to it now as an adult and analyzing it that way, I can see that like that is very much intentional, right? Like Emily, you had mentioned the lightning strikes, the dream sequence or nightmare sequences that Arnold goes through after he beats up that innocent person. The way that innocent person cries, which was so traumatic to me when I was a kid, all of it is like very intentional in building this like this darkness to this episode that makes the statement feel like earned, even though it's sort of a statement that is a little bit obvious from the start, and the sort of thing that you see coming, especially like if you know the whole self-defense ideology that is so often taught, right? That like it's about self-defense, you don't go looking for trouble, like Emily said. You sort of know where this episode is going. I think that the animation and the scripting really make it feel like something that you learn anyway, even if you're sort of inured to the idea, which even kids may have been. And so I think that this is an episode that really showcases the strength of animation and writing and music of Hey Arnold. And it's all towards this idea that is really what Arnold is all about, I think. So a really strong episode, an episode that is like, it demonstrates how real Arnold can get, I guess, even in this sort of like funny circumstances.
Yeah, real, I think, is a good descriptor for that. That's well said. Drew, we'll kick it over to you now. What do you think about this episode? What are some of your top-level thoughts?
Yeah, as I said earlier, this is definitely one of the episodes that stuck with me. Like, I remember, like, it basically beat by beat, and even some specific lines from it, you know, just even many years later. Today, when we watched it, it was the first time I've seen it in a long time, but I still remembered it, you know, very much so. And the arc, the character arc and the story arc that it's going through is stuff that we've seen before. It's, you know, what does it mean to have power, to gain power, in this case, physical power, and how do we use that power, right? Like, that's the sort of lesson that this episode is trying to teach. You know, at the beginning, we see Arnold without any power, and what happens to him as a result. He couldn't defend himself when he needed to. And then we see him, you know, we see a classic sort of montage of him learning to gain the power. And just like all of the tropes that it's playing at and poking at in, like, you know, Kung Fu and Bruce Lee type movies that we've seen over and over again, you know, it goes awry. He misuses his power. And it kind of, the scene that everyone's talking about, the one where he karate chops this poor man's clothes off when he just wanted to know where the bus stop was, is something that horrified me as a child and continues to. Yes, yeah. When Harry said that it deeply upset you, I think I agree. It absolutely horrified me and stuck with me and showed me how even like the quickest of moments, the smallest of actions, like can cause something to affect someone else because of a power difference there, right? Like that's sort of what's going on here. And I think it's really interesting that they chose to lampshade the movies and the tropes that it's pulling from, like, so clearly, right? Like, Gerald calls Arnold Bruce Lee, like, more than once. So
at least twice.
Yeah, exactly. So that's really, I really like what they're doing with this episode, and the fact that it stuck with me and caused such a deep empathetic relationship, reaction to, like, to that man who got beat up by Arnold unjustly. Yeah, like, that speaks to something that makes the episode good. I do want to point out a couple of interesting things that I noticed. There's this Zen garden room, just a room with a Zen garden. Like, the carpet looks like a raked Zen garden. There's just rocks in the room. That's just for this episode. I don't think that ever makes a return. And then also, at the very beginning, this is something really interesting that they're doing with Grandma, and I don't know if anyone else noticed this, but at the very beginning, before they reveal that it's going to be like a Kung Fu movie episode, Grandma is Western. She's in a cowboy hat. She's doing a whole Western shtick, like almost over the toply so, until it switches on a dime.
This is such a good point.
She's doing a Kung Fu shtick, like a sensei and you know, type plot line. And the switch that they're doing with her character said something about how they use her in the series, actually. Because earlier on, in, you know, in the episode where she helps Arnold break the turtle out from the aquarium, right? Like, in that one, she plays, like, a different role that has to do with tropes, right? Like, they definitely allow Arnold's grandma to sort of fill, like, the archetypal roles of different tropes that they're playing at. And I think that this episode really, really shows that.
Wow.
I love that you said that.
Yeah, that is a killer point. And actually, all three of you kind of touched on things that I also made note of and really stuck with me. They all have something to do with, I keep coming back to the word growth in my head. Like, this episode marks a distinct growth for the series up to this point. And I guess we have the benefit of saying that because we're watching everything in production code order. Grandma's a great example of that. That stood out to me too. The fact that up to this point, Grandma is one thing in these episodes. She takes on one persona. She fulfills, one sort of, type of utility to the plot. But then, yeah, there's that switch and it, you know, shows the lengths that Craig and his team are kind of willing to go to utilize this character, in a good, better way. Harry, I like that you brought up that, you know, it's noteworthy that Craig, I don't know if like he took this episode on or how they went about it, how it was decided, but it does take on a distinctly darker energy that instead of like the ebbs and flows of this episode, like are us finding a way back to some sort of like normalcy of like pleasantness that we're sort of used to with the show up to this point. And it set the tone very early, you know, with that kind of redistribution of physical power against Arnold that he in turn dispenses upon others. We're scratching at like some different boundaries for this show that I don't really think we have up to this point.
Yeah, so two really great points. First of all, to echo what Drew said and add to it a little bit, it's also really important that she was doing the cowboy bit and she switched, and the show made it very clear that there was an intentionality to that switch. Like, she literally says, "Oh, I have plans for Arnold," and then we cut to her affecting the sensei. So, like, it's not just that the show uses her to fill those archetypal roles, it's that that's literally her teaching style, right? Is that, like, she inhabits this role play that gives Arnold an opportunity to learn something. And, like, if you think about why these two episodes are arranged the way they are, they're both about the older generations teaching children something and how teaching works and how it works effectively. And so it's really fascinating to see that happen in this episode, to see how, like, grandma's teaching style is about, like, letting Arnold make his own mistakes and learn from his growth. And that's what grandpa does in the next episode too. So to talk about Arnold's arc in this, which is really fascinating for me, because I think that Arnold is such an effectively utilized and realized character already by this episode, that this episode sort of transcends the usual karate metaphors and gets more effectively to the heart of what I think that's really about, right? Like, I think at the end of this episode, when Grandma says that it's about self-defense, I understand it better than I would have in another show or in another movie or something, right? Because I understand what self-defense is literally defense of a self. It's about having the power, as Drew put it, to be able to preserve who you are as a person. And that's why it's so important that this happens to Arnold, I think, is because we know who Arnold is so well, and because it's so horrifying, like Drew put it, and so disturbing to see this character that we know and love so well be transformed into this. And also, this episode very notably subverts the usual trope of a martial arts, which is that the power is addictive and it becomes something that they enjoy. There's a little bit of that. Arnold says he likes it, but in the actual framing and the actual animation of this episode, it's made very abundantly clear that Arnold is actually, in fact, traumatized, and he's very afraid. That's what the lightning strikes represent to me, is that every time Arnold acts out and, like, uses his karate chops to scare someone, you can see in his face that he's deeply afraid. And that's why the mugging at the beginning of this episode is so important, that it's so scary and it's so real. And it's, like, it's wild, right? Like, it's wild to see a kid just straight up get mugged, like, without any sort of, like, editorialization or sort of, like, magical realist distance from it. Like, this is just straight up a dude in a leather jacket just grabs Arnold, throws him into an alleyway, and beats him up. Like, that just happens. It's like we're, like, almost at very special episode of Hey Arnold levels from there. And then, like, it goes this other way with martial arts, but that martial arts ends up, because of the darkness inherent in this episode, it ends up actually, like, working really well, in my opinion. But, like, all of that happens because of how well we understand Arnold, right? So, like, there's a sense in which Craig is, like, it's a massive flex, right? Because he's saying, like, I've established this world well enough that I can leverage these tropes in this story to say something better than used to be said, which is that, like, instead of saying, like, okay, like, you have to be careful with power, otherwise you'll become what you hate, which is what generally those tropes are alluding toward, it's saying that actually, like, you shouldn't be so afraid of the world that you let it make you something that you're not, which is, like, a much more nuanced and a much more valuable story for children, I think. And it's really fascinating that Arnold can do that and really, like, mature, I think, right?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask people, like, have you ever had, like, your property or person, like, violated in that way? Like, have you ever been mugged or had your car broken into or had your house broken into or something like that? Like, I haven't been mugged, but I have had, like, been present for, like, a break-in attempt at my apartment. But I do have I've talked to people who have been mugged, and, like, the fright, like, the perpetual fright even after the event that Harry is describing, like, I think I couldn't quite identify with that until that, like, happened to me. I don't know if anyone else, like, has had an experience like that, that, like, change the way that they view their own safety at different places. And maybe that's the fact that that only happened to me recently is like some matter of privilege of my, you know, personal identity or circumstances. But
yeah, no, I'm fair. But Jesus, you're sorry that happened, obviously, or that, you know, that has to, I mean, that set up such a great discussion point, and I feel bad that it exists at all. But I,
yeah, sure. I don't think that it's a unique experience. Like, I think that, no, of I don't course. Know if you or Emily, but I think like you could probably describe similar stories.
Well, and especially like given that, Hey Arnold is a show about the urban experience, right? So like it's important to portray stuff like that, because like this is a show about, this is something that actually could happen to the demographic that is watching it, right?
Yeah, I was just thinking, that's such a good question, Drew, because it was reminding me of a mutual friend of ours back in college. His car was broken into it, and he had an expensive mandolin that like meant a lot to him. And he's so good at mandolin, at playing that instrument. And like, it meant a lot to him identity wise, I feel, even just like, maybe I'm putting words into his mouth, but like, he was so good at it, so talented. And then it was just taken from him when his car was unlocked for like 5 minutes or something ridiculous like that in Dinkytown. And it's like, I don't know, like identity wise, that's a great point, Drew.
Well, and that's such a good way to frame it, Emily, right? Because like, that is what the heart of that fear is like the destruction of the self, the idea that like what you are can be taken away from you. And what this episode is saying is that you have to not allow that to happen. And that's what's at the heart of self-defense and at the heart of being sort of like, ready, is not like to take things from people, is not even like to enjoy doing that, but it's to be able to preserve who you are, even as people try to take it away from you.
Yeah, that's well said. And I think I, not directly having happened to me, but like coming at it from a slightly different angle, back in college, one of my roommates got mugged on his way back to our apartment, and it was like far enough from campus and close enough to where we had lived where, even though it didn't happen to me, I like, you know, I heard the tale and like I had nightmares about like that type of experience for a little while because it was so close to home. And like, if don't know if this is too much of a stretch or not, but the fact that like so much of the focus of the show is like the city, the neighborhood, and like what these people kind of put into their setting and vice versa. Like it felt like this, it definitely felt like a weird sort of violation for Arnold to, you know, ride a bus that we've seen him ride countless times, have that happen to him. And like that's, you know, violation of self and violation of place and space.
And show, as you just pointed out, that's a radical point.
Well, thank you. Emily, what you got?
Yeah, these are all great points. I just wanted to bring up a question that Drew posted when we were watching this in the watch party, which I thought was awesome. You were asking about, why does Grandma keep bringing up green tea? And then Arnold was always like, no, I don't want green tea. I want hot chocolate. Like, what do you think that means?
It's about the preservation of self. Like, I think that's sort of what Harry was talking about earlier. Like,
oh, there we go.
Tea. Right, right, 100%, right? Like Kung Fu Arnold loves green tea, right? So, like the idea that Arnold is still a kid and he still wants hot chocolate at the end of the day instead of green tea is demonstrating that, like, Arnold is still who he was. He's still that kind goofball that Helga loves so much. Also, as an aside, maybe the most upsetting part of this episode is that Helga is barely in it. She just sees Kung Fu Arnold in the hallway and yes, looks horrified. And it's like the implications of just that moment are so upsetting to me too, right? Because like Arnold is so important to Helga that like that's where you almost get mad at Arnold. It's like, Arnold, like, you have to live up to more than this because you're going to hurt Helga. So it's, that was an interesting part to me, but yeah, that's a really good point. I think Drew noticed that like metaphor of green tea versus hot chocolate. And I think it's like a super like important log line for this episode and what it's trying to do with the idea that you have to remain who you are. Right.
For sure. And then also we were noticing that he's not wearing his hat, his classic blue hat, when he's, becoming this martial arts superstar, which, so just another visual symbol there.
So many good things here, right? Yeah, exactly.
they've visually distinguished him in other ways too, right? Like his hair is down, right? He doesn't have the spiky hair, right? Like
he's got the headband. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even his eyes, like his eyes are never like partially closed like that. Like he's got this constant like grimace glare on his face.
It made me uncomfy, for sure. I will give a shout out to something that is tangentially related to this half episode, and then I'll leave space for anybody else to kind of give their wrapping thoughts. But last night I accidentally watched like a really good table setter movie in advance of this episode, The Foul King, which is a 2000 film made in South Korea, starring Song Kang-ho. He's somebody who wants to take on professional wrestling. You know, it's a 2-hour movie exploring the things you would maybe think it does, you know, with regards to like critique of self, critique of masculinity, and like the yearning for violence. And as good as that movie is, the fact that like we were talking about how these or in our group chat about how these half episodes were so dense, how they felt like feature length films, like the fact that this, you know, 11-minute episode can put together this 3+ act structure so well and communicate that same thing so effectively, I don't know, makes you think. Good show. You know, hot take, but like
jolly
I said, I'll leave
good
it open.
Show even
jolly good. Are there any other jolly good shout outs that y'all would like to put forth?
I've got a couple of shout outs. I can go through them real quick. The very beginning of this episode, we see Arnold jamming out in headphones on the bus with a cassette player. And I just love that moment. He's in his zone before he gets mugged. So, but just cute to see that little moment. We also have a great toothpick gag when he's beating up the people in the alley for his friends and goes, you know, goes into it too hard. He like cuts their toothpicks all in half, which is funny
to
see.
It's like when you cut the tip of the villain's hair off with the sword.
I was just going to say, it's so anime. Yeah.
And then my last shout out is for the bus pass itself, which we see briefly.
I'm so glad you're bringing this up.
It says his name in huge all caps letters, Arnold, and then born, yes. And that's all it says besides
so
bus pass.
That's amazing. I didn't even catch that.
I would just like to reiterate, like we talked about how it's important that Craig Bartlett directed or wrote this episode. Like, I think that the themes of this episode are really like the themes of the entire show in a big way, right? Like we've talked in the past about how Arnold is about that moment as a kid when you're starting to learn that the world is a scary place and you're starting to learn that you're like going to be affected by it. And it's about teaching kids that they have the power, so to speak, to remain themselves and to, in fact, not only remain themselves, but make the world a better place through who they are. And so like to see that theme reflected here as it was in something like Field Trip just goes to show that like this show was really thinking on its feet. And to sort of go off of what Cody was saying too, it's also so amazing to me that, like you had said, Cody, this episode manages to do so much in like 12 minutes or whatever it was. And I think that the reason why that's possible is just because it's already so established, right? Like this, it's a great episode of television in the truest sense, in that it builds off of what was already there, like a good show should, right? And to do that while remaining episodic and remaining accessible is really an achievement. So this is just a really great episode for those reasons.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. Hopefully those listening feel the same way. But with that, I think we can safely close the book on this discussion of episode 9A of Hey Arnold. Don't touch that dial, because we'll be back shortly with a conversation about episode 9B. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Stew Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. the whole gang's here, and we've got Drew back with us as we dig into episode 9B of Hey Arnold, which is, of course, titled Roughin' It. Original air date, November 11th, 1996. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. It is the longest one that we've had to date, so buckle up. Grandpa takes Arnold and Gerald on a weekend camping trip. As they set up the campsite, Big Bob, Helga, and Phoebe show up in a high-tech RV to rough it as well. Then, as everyone hikes up a mountain trail while exploring the great outdoors, they get lost in the wilderness. Arnold and Gerald agree to help everyone find their way back to their campsite by using Grandpa survival tips. So if you're just hearing this, you do not need to watch the episode because that's all of it. Just kidding, you definitely should watch it still. And as I tiptoe away from that, we are, of course, shouting out the people who made this episode possible. Big news this episode, we've got some debuts in store for the co-directors, Sherm Cohen and Alan Smart. These are their first directorial credits. I didn't do a deep enough dive to see if they'd worked on the show up to this point in other capacities, but shout outs to those two, as well as Jonathan Greenberg, who has the sole writing credit for this episode. We last saw him in episode 6A, Heat. He was a co-writer for that episode. So shout outs. A shout out to Harry also, as the first person that I will kick it to talk a little bit about this episode. Harry?
Oh, wow. It's interesting that this is a Greenberg joint, because my favorite thing about this episode is that it's such a character piece, kind of like Heat was, where like there is the ostensible A-plot, right, of almost mirroring Mugged. It's Grandpa giving Arnold and Gerald a chance to sort of learn from their own experiences, as opposed to being domineering and forcing them to learn. He's sort of like, he has an arc where he learns the best way to teach is to sort of stand back and let them do what they're going to do. But also, right in the middle of this episode, Helga and Phoebe and Big Bob show up, and then we get to see Gerald and Arnold interact with Phoebe and Helga and Bob, and we get to see all sorts of great Helga scenes, where Helga talks about how she needs to be with Arnold, she wants to be alone. They go to Ophelia's Overlook. They hike out there, which was the funniest thing. And it's just a great example of like how we can elevate these episodes by introducing character and character dynamic, right? Like Helga doesn't necessarily have an arc in this episode, and neither does Phoebe, but they're here to sort of further characterize and contrast the arc of the main characters, right? And so it's just great to see that, like, even if this is an episode about fundamentally Arnold and Grandpa, it's still beneficial to include these other characters. And it just goes to show like what a great show Arnold is and what a great ensemble it has, because without that ensemble, this would be a much more conventional and much less interesting episode in my mind.
Yeah, the same can be said for the podcast as well. I'm glad we have this ensemble here, included in which is Emily. Emily, what do you think about Roughin' It?
Yeah, we were talking about this being like the grossest episode of Hey Arnold that we've seen so far. There's a lot of little boy humor, if I can say that. It's just like goofy humor that's happening throughout. But yeah, I really like this episode as a companion to Mugged, because we have in Mugged, it's a very grandma focused episode, and you're really a part of the city. The city's so much a part of this plot and everything. And in this one, we have a grandpa in nature episode. So, like, just seeing that dynamic is cool between the two, A and B. And then we also get to see Helga's family more, which Harry was mentioning, but like, she's got an actual dad, and like, we didn't really know that until this moment. Her dad just sucks, and it's sad to see. And we'll learn more about her family as we watch more episodes. But yeah, more of a glimpse into that dynamic with her father. And I also just, something else that stood out to me is the voice acting is really strong in this episode. Francesca Smith, we shout her out a lot, the voice of Helga. She was like 9 at the time of these episodes. Like, she does a great job with her lines in this one. I wrote down a lot of quotes, and she said them in such sweet ways. Especially when she's talking to her dad about like, can we please invite those guys over? Like, I don't really like them like that, but like, she just gets into it really well. And then also, I got to shout out Dan Castellaneta,
who there we go.
I'm definitely saying his name wrong, but the voice of Arnold's grandpa has some amazing voice acting lines in this one that make me laugh out loud, especially at the beginning where Arnold's like, whoa, it's beautiful. And he's looking out at the trees and Grandpa goes, sure, it's beautiful. Everything in nature's beautiful.
I wrote unless that one down too.
Unless it's ugly. But yeah, great, great voice acting. Interesting episode, gross episode, but a fun one to watch.
Man, I'm so glad that this was also a quote heavy episode for you. For me, it was, yeah, a lot of Grandpa quotes. And basically, whenever anybody talked about somebody else passing gas, like, it's an easy win for me. I will stop talking about passing gas and kick it over to Drew for your kind of big takeaways from this episode.
When I was preparing to watch this episode and record the episode of the podcast based on it, I messaged Harry that this is the one where they eat steak and eggs and go camping. So I think the biggest takeaway from this episode is that, like, steak and eggs were a thing. Like, as a child, I was like, that's a breakfast? No way. You can eat steak and eggs for breakfast? And I think I sent him the screenshot of the animations of Arnold and Gerald stuffing their faces with steak and eggs over at the Pataki campsite. So that's
so good.
That's like the biggest takeaway from this episode. Honestly, if you watch any part of this episode, like, just look up the steak and eggs clip on YouTube if you don't have the time to watch the full episode. When it comes to the actual content of, like, the moral of this episode, I think that's sort of twofold. You can sort of look at it at first as like a critique of technology, like being too reliant on technology and being more like in line with like naturalism. You should really listen to the earth and the forest and, you know, that kind of thing. Don't rely on the Pathfinder or the refrigeration unit for food or for navigation, right? And I think when I first was thinking about it, I mostly was like, this is like old fashioned and wrong. Like, this is not a good moral, right? Like, it's not about technology. Like, it's just about being like having the knowledge. And when I look back at that first thought, I think, you know, actually, it's not about the technology at all. It's about the knowledge that they got from Grandpa. Like, specifically, it's about, like, applying knowledge instead of relying on, like, something else. It's like sort of like the, you're not going to have a calculator in your pocket when you grow up from your elementary school teacher. I mean, that ended up being false, but it's like the same idea, right? Like, if you understand the concepts and you know the basics, like, even when your crutches fail, like, you will be okay, right? You'll be able to prop yourself up without crutches because you have the knowledge and know how to do so. So I think that moral is actually a good one. And, like, it's not just, like, technophobia by old people, which it could perhaps be misinterpreted as. I think when Carrie said it was the character piece, I really agree with that. And I think that the person that this characterizes most is Bob. It's the dad. I think that this is his episode, if anyone's episode. It gives us a huge window into how he acts and how he fronts, and how he might act when that front is broken. And I think that also gives a good window into, you know, Helga's home life, which, you know, we see throughout the series, you know, sort of becomes grimmer and grimmer and gets real dark, actually. And at one point he even calls her Olga. Which is not her name. That's her older sister's name, who is the family favorite, as we will find out.
So I also, brutal.
Yeah, absolutely brutal. The one final thing that I want to say that has also stuck with me almost as much as steak and eggs is the gross spoiled food from the refrigerator. I like see that still image in my head. It's like dripping and smelling. And
it's so gross.
Throws it at the tree. Like, I have a gag reflex that's pretty active, and that gets me every time. So if there's any two scenes that you want to watch to get the full Roughin' It experience, it's the steak and egg scene and the scene where he throws the garbage food at the tree.
Wow, highs and lows, huh? Because, like, truly, that steak and egg, it's like Miyazaki, right? Where it makes you hungry. It's like, I want to eat this, but that's certainly not the case with the bags of food. Cody, did you want to state your thoughts?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I can. Before we pivot or whatever, y'all said a lot of really good things. A lot of them were things that stood out to me as well, which is great. That's a great sign for my social anxiety going into episodes like this. Oh, I was unmuted. Anyway, the one of my big takeaways.
Aww. We all kind of
I don't know if that's a good bit or not. Everybody sort of touched on the texture in this episode in various ways. Emily, I really liked what you said about the setting of this episode and having this paired with like a very city focused episode, like Mugged, and like we're going out to
that
the
blew
woods.
My mind, dude. I was gonna bring that up, but go ahead.
No, and because I'm such a doofus for structure with these, and I'm like the fact that the first one third or so of this episode, or maybe even like a quarter, like we have to do a lot in this episode. We have to take ourselves out of the city and establish this new arena for our characters to do things in and have a really great, as it's been said, like a really good, like character driven episode, like a really good character piece. A lot of that is done through texture. Like we've been talking about, like the farting and the making duty behind the bushes, and there's like this very
scat.
Grotesque, yeah, scat, skunk spray. The steak and eggs too is like a very different texture. It's like good texture, but like Arnold and Gerald wolfing down those plates of food is like, it also characterizes this area in its own way of like the way that we build up a new setting in a short amount of time is by making things as visceral as possible. Even if like steak and eggs aren't like inherently part of the woods, like the fact that that's part of the city coming into the woods and Arnold is he's wilding for the steak and eggs, like getting that little bit of the city back is filling in with so much, I don't know, like this hunger, this insatiable nature. The other thing, going back to characters, really quick shout out to Grandpa. He was the one that I gravitated toward the most. I do think this is Big Bob's episode because it's his big shiny debut, and it's important for us to see him in contrast to everything else. But like, especially coming off of an episode, not super recently, but Snow, wherein Grandpa learns a lesson and is like very comfortable with like where he's at by the end of it, and like he goes through his own arc, no questions asked. To see him at the end of this episode very comfortable in his relationship with his grandson and his grandson's like friends and classmates was so like, it was like a warm feeling that I probably have not experienced in like this watch through, which has been full of warm feelings because it's Hey Arnold. But that just really hit me in a really good, sweet way. And, you know, he had little effect to the plot of this episode, but like having that beat where it was at the end was such like a beautiful bookend, I thought.
It really characterizes how different Grandpa is in the ways they use him from Grandma, right? Where like Grandpa is much more of a conventional sort of flawed character, whereas Grandma is like this magical realist sort of like mystical mentor type character, right? Grandpa like has to learn, and he's like a work in progress, just like Arnold is, right? Like I think shouting out Snow was really smart because like it's the same thing, right? Like whereas Grandma, at the end of her episode, Mugged, seems like she had this figured out all along, and like she was waiting for Arnold to come to his realization on his own. In my mind, Grandpa didn't, right? Like he starts this episode trying to impart wisdom and joy of camping to Arnold and Gerald, and he fails because he comes on too strong, right? And so like he actually has to have that arc where he comes to realize like, oh no, the kids will like figure it out. They're going to be all right without my overbearing. I have to have faith in them. But it's really heartening to see that happen. And to see it happen like for adults, right? Because like we've repeatedly talked about how this is a show that sort of flattens the hierarchy between kids and adults. And so like, I think it's really important for kids to learn that adults have things to learn. Right, just like they do. It's both anti-authoritarian and it's just humanizing. It's like humanizing in an anti-authoritarian way, which is really important, I think. And just to shout out again, like it totally blew my mind and escaped my notice that like this is a city country contrast like series. And I think that's like super important and super pointed, right? Like that the first episode is all about life in the city. And then the second episode is all about camping, literally roughing it. Like that completely missed me. So when Emily brought it up, it blew my mind. And then my only other thing, real quick is that Drew said something about how this is an episode that has, an obvious moral that it actually sort of like delves further into and explores the actual interior good message beneath. That is also what Mugged is doing in a really real way, right? So like both of these episodes could be seen as episodes that are using the richness of Arnold's mythos and characterization and themes in order to enhance stories that have already been told and messages that have already been imparted to children so that they can find new and better ideas under it, right? Like, Drew, you had said that the moral that technology is bad and that we should get back to nature is bad, right? Like, that's nothing. Like it's a bad technophobic thing to impart. But like you had said, this episode doesn't end up there. And the way it doesn't end up there is by using the characters like Helga and Big Bob and Grandpa to actually say that instead it's about having respect for and empathy for what people are trying to tell you and seeing it as valuable and worth paying attention to, which is a good metaphor, right? Just like in Mugged, the idea of Mugged is not that if you become too addicted to power, you'll become the thing that you hate most, which is like the ostensible trope of martial arts movies like that. It's actually much more about self-defense truly and preserving something that is worth preserving, which is a better metaphor, right? So like, it's really fascinating how both of these episodes do that and do it so effectively by utilizing the Hey Arnold-ness of the episodes, which is, it's just brilliant.
I was going to ask if anyone sort of, like, there's two different things that we're pointing out here with the adults, which is interesting because I think that they don't get a lot of screen time in this episode, but is that like that one of them, Big Bob, you're sort of seeing through the veneer, like there's that experience of seeing through the veneer of what an adult presents. And then there's another one of an adult, which is this grandpa learning like the right way to engage with teaching a lesson. And I was wondering if you have like any examples of that, like in your life where you like saw through the veneer of an adult and it like changed their perception, like changed your perception of them, right? You're like, oh, like, their intent was different than I thought, or who they are is like different because I saw through the cracks at this moment. Like, I think we all might have like some sort of formative experience there where you realize that like adults are still learning too.
Yeah. That like the East of Eden moment, right? Where it's like, that's the, what's that quote is like the scariest time in a child's life is when they learn that their parents are fallible. And it means that like all the gods are dead then. And you can build them back again, but they'll never shine quite the same. And like, it's wild because I think Hey Arnold is all about that, right? Like, it's literally all about that moment when you realize that the world is fallible. And that's scary, that like nobody is there. Like nobody's directing this except for you, and about how you cope with that. I had all kinds of them, right? I mean, and a lot of them are retroactive, right? Like you don't realize that that's what's happening in the moment. And then you look back at it and you realize that.
Right,
and I think
sure.
That's a big part of what makes Hey Arnold so valuable, right? Is that it'll help kids learn that. Right. It'll be like, oh, like when my dad was in a bad mood and he yelled at me, like that was his fault. Right. Like not mine. And so like there's almost an anti-shame teaching tool here, which is really great.
Right. Like when someone yells at you, it has nothing really to do with you. Usually it has everything to do with them and where they're at. But yeah, Drew, that's such a good question. And the one example that comes to mind is just like thinking about when a teacher would make a mistake in grade school and you're like, oh, like I thought this was like, you know, a god of sorts. This is like the supposed to be the wisest person that's in my life besides like, you know, your parents or your grandparents or what have you. And then they make a mistake and you're like, wait a second. Like, what's the deal? Do they not know everything? I thought they were supposed to be teaching me everything that I'm supposed to know. Like,
right.
I don't get
it's
it.
Like, there's that moment when like, I don't know if this has happened to you, but like, I remember a couple of times growing up, like, and my parents are very good parents, but like they would like yell at me. And then like later on in the evening, they would like apologize. And that apology was like almost worse than the actual like inciting incident, because it was so, I didn't like know how to parse it. Right. It was like, what do you mean? Like, you don't make mistakes. Like, so obviously it was my bad. And so like the idea that I had to like learn that my parents could make mistakes made the like fact that they were apologizing to me more upsetting than when they were yelling at me, because at least I could understand that. Right. And so like, that's sort of what you're getting at, I think.
That's so freaking sad, but yeah, that's a great
point. Isn't it wild?
Yeah.
I think I totally understand that. And looking back, I don't know if I can come across like one specific example, but there's tons of times where I realize, yeah, like that moment where like my mom did X or like my dad reacted this way, like that was like not because of like something I did, or it was literally something that was like going on in their head, right? Right. Like their internal monologue is as rich as my own, you know, they're not perfect.
Yeah. You even have like, as you guys were saying earlier, like grandpa's trying to teach them this lesson about how great nature is. And he ends up teaching them the opposite lesson. Like Gerald right away is like, man, nature bites, like, which is
right.
The
and
opposite
it's his fault,
lesson.
Right?
It completely.
Yeah, he makes it work. He says that you have to do work first. It, like he didn't make it the right balance, and so they lost interest. Yeah.
It's a lot like in Snow, like Cody said. Go ahead, Cody.
Oh yeah, no, that's speaking of Gerald, forgive me, Emily, if I misremembered the group chat, but did you say that there were like blink and you miss it, Gerald and Phoebe moments that I missed while I was taking notes, or am I completely misremembering? Because they had some interplay this episode, right?
Yes, they did. I wrote them down. They had some cute little quick moments, and we first saw that happen in Operation Ruthless, which was episode 7A. But yeah, in this episode, we see Gerald like reaches out to Phoebe when she's crossing over the log and just like lends a hand to her so that she can better cross the log. It's so adorable. It happens in the blink of an eye. And then you also see them sitting next to each other, like at the campfire, which is just cutesy. But Phoebe turns to Helga later in the episode and is like, man, like, I must admit, I really admire Gerald's survival skills.
Very, very
so
good.
Cute.
Yeah, that's the main one I was thinking of too.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah, we spent so much time talking about the adults, which we should, because like pound for pound, they were very like they were efficiently used, like getting a sense of Big Bob's interiority over the course of like a minute and a half to 2 minutes total, like for this new, not quite tentpole character, but he's very important, as I think Drew said earlier. So it's nice to shout out the bright shining beacons of light that we get from the youth of this episode. I'm seeing some hands, so I will defer. Go ahead, y'all.
Go ahead, Emily.
Oh, we were talking in the chat too. You all are huge fans of A Goofy Movie, and many of you were agreeing that this is like a 10-minute breakdown of A Goofy Movie. I don't know if you all wanted to talk about that at all.
I mean, like they take like shot for shot almost the RV pulling up into the campsite, and Big Bob, who is literally an analog for Pete from A Goofy Movie, steps out. It's hilarious. It's like they're the same picture, right? Like you can see like literally side by side the same thing happening. It's really funny. And like interestingly getting at the same places, right? About like teaching your kids and about like what that means. It's really funny. It's interesting that we spent so much time talking with the adults, like, because I didn't think that this was Big Bob's episode. Right at first, but now that we've been talking about it, I really am thinking about it differently, and how this episode, even through Grandpa and his contrast to Big Bob, is setting up a lot of the stuff that Drew, you had said that we were going to see later, which is really fascinating.
Yeah, no, totally. I think that's like a brilliant point, a brilliant takeaway from this. Go ahead, Emily.
Sorry to cut you off there, but it's like
no, you're good.
What Disney did in, an hour and a half? Craig Bartlett did in 10 minutes?
Right.
Come on.
Get it
done. Come on.
Get there.
Not that a goofy, not to throw any shade at all to a Goofy Movie, but just like Disney is not on par with Nickelodeon. Like, let's be honest.
Man.
Wow. I mean,
very, very spicy.
We can have a discussion about that later. Yeah.
Does anybody have a palate cleanser to cool the spice as we wind it up here?
Yeah, just one last shout out that I have from this episode, and it's the name of Bob has a special device that goes on the front of the RV so that he doesn't have to drive on a road. He can just go through the trees, and it's the patented bumperizer that just flattens him. It just flattens him. Doesn't even have to cut him down. Yeah, that's something that I thought was pretty funny.
I just have one quick shout out that Gerald says towards the middle of the episode. He goes, "Wow, nature's a lot more fun when you watch it on TV." She's like, "Wow, that's a very true line." Like, if you think about planet Earth and stuff,
yeah,
like
we've
that.
All watched
and,
that, yeah,
yeah,
and a meta line, right? Like we're watching nature on TV in a sense as we watch Gerald
in cartoon form,
which is even more fun.
Indeed.
I guess I have the shout out that just like we've talked about this before, but like Big Bob is a really wildly interesting character for a kid's show, right? Like just the idea that there's like a dude who is like he is both human in that we understand his motivations and where he's coming from, and he's a dad. And he's a bad dude, right? Like Big Bob is not a good person, right? Like he's not a very good father, and he sort of becomes this like ostensible antagonist. And he doesn't become an antagonist in the like traditional kid show sense where he's like a scheming villain. He's just like kind of not a good dude. And he traumatizes Helga, his daughter, as a result. And it's like it's wild and so sophisticated that a cartoon does that, right? Where like I'm not saying like Big Bob is not a villain. He's just like kind of a bad father. And like the idea that we have space and nuance in a children's show to portray adults who are just not good people without making them like villains or evil and like making them people that we can recognize from our lives is like really, really something. And I think that it's like really important thematically that he was set up here, especially in contrast to Grandpa, who is like doing the thing that adults and mentors should do, right? Like this is basically an episode that's saying like it's cool when you're the adults in your life care about you, so you should care about them too. But at the same time, it's also like teaching kids what it looks like when adults don't care about you. And like, that's a wild and important thing to teach kids. And it's like really, really something that it's happening in this show.
Amen. Preach, et cetera. With that, I have no good way to segue. We've spent a lot of time today in the Zen garden and got extra lost in the thick trees of, I don't know, football head forest. So if you're listening and you made it this far, thanks for seeing us through all this for this extra beefy episode. Drew, this was a ton of fun. Thank you so much again for being here.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Drew. Where
can people... Yes. Oh, please come back first and foremost. But in case we never see you again, where can other people find you in the world or online? And or is there anything in general that you'd like to plug?
Yeah, it was an absolute pleasure to be on the show. To be honest, I have a lot of thoughts about things that I watch and engage with, and being able to talk to friends about it while being recorded is awesome. I do improv in the Twin Cities, not right now because there's a pandemic, but you can find me there whenever that starts back up. And I make mashups on the internet. Those are the music ones where you mix two songs together. You can find me on YouTube. My channel name is Ash Coolbro. I don't know. You might find something you like there.
They're
it
awesome.
Runs a gambit between video games, pop culture, and anime. And I hope to be on again, honestly. Let me know when want me back, and I'll come on.
Absolutely. Yeah, that goes unsaid, I think. And as always, thank you, listener, for listening to this goofy thing of ours. We've had such a fun time making this podcast so far, and we hope it's been fun for y'all as well. For even more fun, you can follow Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast, on Twitter and on Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod. And that's kids with a Z, buckos. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narveson. You can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry. You can find me at Shiitake Harry. Yeah, thanks again, Drew. This was so fun.
And I'm Emily. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
And I will just cap it here. Oh, oof, holy Toledo, that's rank.